Okay, we're glad you're back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio for another Gold Nugget segment. Today's featured guest, Gerald Celente from the Trends Research Institute. Well, this week, Congress gave approval for a small-scale military operation in Syria, but some analysts are worried that a full-scale military conflict with the U.S. could be imminent. Gerald Celente joins me with his take on the situation and how it might affect the markets. He's the director of the Trends Research Institute. His team produces the Trends Journal. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Thank you, Chris.
You know, some media sources are suggesting that a showdown between the U.S. and Syria could lead to a potential conflict there in the Middle East, another front, if you will. Unlike some of their neighbors, I think you'd agree that Syria has a formidable military resources and presence. And sometimes these conflicts can get out of hand. Any comments?
Well, you go back and look at our top trend for 2013 in the Trends Journal. It was war, and we've been writing about the lead-up to this for a long time. And writing about that lead-up in previous Trends journals, we kept showing how the information coming out about what Syria was doing and who was involved has really been distorted to make the case for an attack rather than making its case for peace. And so I watched, for example, the recent Senate foreign intelligence hearings, and it was a disgrace listening to this charade that was going on. It reminded me of being in high school and listening to a principal and the students babble on. And then there was a report this past week in the Wall Street Journal analyzing what the so-called evidence is and really what it means, and it's two very different things. And the Wall Street Journal punched holes in just about all of it. So then when you see the report that came out from the Senate panel after the hearing, what they did was they changed the focus to, quote, change the momentum on the battlefield. So all of a sudden now, America is becoming involved in another foreign entanglement after losing Iraq, losing Afghanistan, causing a civil war in Libya, and now they're going to fix Syria? Of course there's going to be more destabilization. Oh, by the way, conveniently out of the news, hey, look what's going on over there in Egypt. Doesn't even make the newspapers anymore. And bloodshed continues, riots ensue, and destabilization is at levels that have never been seen before in recent history.
And, you know, we're seeing record oil prices, some sources suggesting that we might even revisit those 2008 levels that were staggering, you know, up to $147 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate crude. That has a tendency to, put downward pressure on economic output, as essentially everyone is paying more at the pumps to get to and from work and wherever else they need to travel, as well as our transportation systems. Any thoughts on how this developing situation in the Gulf there might affect it?
Well, that's part of it. The other part is, and you pointed out, I mean, we're looking at a Syria country of 20 million people. Let's suppose your family was wiped out and you lost everything that you had. You think you want to see revenge attacks? So now put this into perspective, Chris. Go back to this past April, and there was the Boston Marathon bombing. They closed down 100 square miles to hunt for a 19-year-old kid that was hiding in a boat. 100 square miles. Business stopped. A state of siege ensued. Now imagine, suppose there's a revenge attack at a 9/11 scale. Suppose there's a dirty bomb, for example, that would go off in San Francisco, or a suitcase-sized nuke, or biological warfare. This country goes on stop. And suppose the same thing happened in France or one of America's other allies. it'll destroy the economy. You have to understand. You don't have to understand. I say that, you know, just in putting it into perspective. I want to make this 100% clear. The United States military has not won a war since World War II. They lost Korea. They lost Vietnam. They lost Iraq. They lost Afghanistan. They destroyed Libya. Civil war ensues. And now they're going to fix Syria. And the other level of hypocrisy, by the way, is all of this, oh, my God, he used chemical weapons, and ostensibly 1,300 people have been killed. And we don't know who did what, by the way. I don't believe any of the information, unless you believe, remember the Maine, the Gulf of Tonkin incident that didn't happen, or the weapons of mass destruction, then you would take everything that they're saying at face value. Be that as it may, if you want to talk about hypocrisy and using weapons of mass destruction, hey, how about a couple of atom bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Oh, you like that Agent Orange that they sprinkled throughout Vietnam, or that napalm? What about all that white phosphorus and depleted uranium the United States has been using and has used in Iraq and Afghanistan and in other countries? Oh, Israel included, by the way, with the white phosphorus. And how about also what we're seeing going on if you kill somebody with carpet bombs or buster bunking bombs? What's the difference? Dead is dead. And to make all this thing about, oh, they use sarin gas, you know, how World War II that is, or World War I, and when you're using all these sophisticated weaponries. Hey, a drone is okay. You could kill with drones, but no unofficial FDA-approved chemical weapons. Oh, by the way, 1,400 dead in Egypt over the last 2 weeks. That's okay. They kill them with bullets. You can't kill them with gas.
You talk about our failure, you might say, to regulate our military efforts. And I'd like to go back to, you mentioned the last war that we really won, and that was World War II. And you might recall how we rebuilt the Axis powers, Italy, Germany, Japan. We helped rebuild, and as a result, the world looked at us and said, has there ever been a nation so benevolent that they actually defeat a power, and instead of horrible reparations that we saw during the Versailles Treaty, we actually rebuilt these nations. Now, fast forward to today, and unlike the little mini conflict we actually won with Storm and Norman Schwarzkopf, the four-day war, that was maybe a model that we need to look back to. A four-day war, we went in, we got business taken care of, and then we pulled out instead of trying to micromanage the scenario. Any comment?
Well, yes. My comment is, I'm speaking now from Colonial Kingston, New York. As a matter of fact, tomorrow marks the 236th year that the New York State was actually formed, right here in Kingston, the first capital of New York State, in 1777. It was on September 6, 1777. And I'm reminded, of course, about the Founding Fathers, and General Washington among them, who in his farewell address warned about becoming involved in foreign entanglements. It's not our business. And as I'm here in Colonial Kingston, New York, and I see the difficulties that this city is having with its number of its population, I want to see my money going to restoring Kingston or Cleveland or Detroit or Camden. Not, you know, $40 million a day, they're estimating, just in some aspects of a war against Syria. So this to me is way out of balance. And there is no such thing as going in and getting out, because if you look back to 1991, you know, the rest of the 90s were involved in a war with Iraq. You know, people forget the no-fly zones and bombs over Baghdad every time. It was a wag-the-dog moment every couple of months. So, no, I'm totally opposed to it as being an American and believing in the foundations of this country. And secondly, to see the lunacy, all anyone has to do, again, at that Senate hearing and listening to them babble on. Oh, and by the way, talking about babbling on, I am sick and tired. I don't want to hear it again. That if only women were in charge, there would be no war. I heard Barbara Boxer going on and on about the need for war. I heard this woman, the senator from New Hampshire, DeHaan, I believe her name is, or something like that. And then I saw that clip of Nancy Pelosi babbling on about a five-year-old grandson and what he had to say about the Syrian war. And I'll tell you why she was quoting the five-year-old grandson, because that's the mind of these people. They got the mind of five-year-olds. There's not a man or woman among them. Where are all the people saying no more to war? How much more money and men do we have to lose, and how many more people does America have to kill before they stop this madness? And here's my United General Salenti's four rules of peace. You're the commander-in-chief. You want to take out Assad? Great. Go take him out. Hey, they just found the bones of King Richard III recently. He got killed in the Battle of the Roses. I loved it, the War of the Roses. And they found him under a parking lot. That's how important he was. So when the king died, the war ended. And anybody out there that wants to support the war, send your kids, send yourself, send your money, send your wife. Go do the fighting. Keep me out of it. And number three, when they retaliate, don't go, oh, they hate our freedom and liberty, and they're terrorists. No, it's payback. The golden rule, do unto others you have them do unto you. So again, you know, this is all very clear. If everything is in place, if you want this war, you pay for it, you go fight it, and keep me out of it. It's going to be another losing battle. Nothing will be accomplished. And I listen to these people on this Senate hearing again. Well, we have every contingency in place to make sure that if the first contingency doesn't work, the second one will.
I'd like to touch on a couple of key anecdotes here. Firstly, you talk about this idea that war is good. You know, it reminds one of George Orwell's 1984, you know, war is peace and endless war. But that takes me back to the 1990s with General Schwarzkopf. If you've had a chance to read his book, it's really quite illuminating. He was one of these amazing folks who actually fought in Vietnam, and he was the type of commander who would run back through open machine gun fire to pick up one of his wounded comrades. And this actually happened. He ran through a minefield one time, not knowing whether he would lose a leg or a limb, and carried a wounded soldier back to the helicopter. He earned several medals just for that one event. And the reason I mention this is that when he talked about his tenure there at taking our troops in on that four-day, 100-hour mini-battle or war in the early 90s, he talks about how he hates war and he knows the horror of it and not get entangled in one of these 10-year or longer Vietnam-like scenarios where you could arguably say we're in currently in the Middle East, a quagmire.
And it wasn't like I was intelligent enough to know that they lied us into it. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident as they reported it. It was a total lie. I was just a young kid, you know, 18 years old, and I couldn't imagine me in a foreign country with a lot of weight on my back getting shot at. There are some guys like Schwarzkopf that liked that trip. And what did he do? We killed 3 million people over there? For what? For a lie? And now we're doing business with the Vietnamese? And I see Hillary Clinton over there when she was Secretary of State saying how we're going to defend the Vietnamese against the Chinese in their dispute over these islands? The whole war thing is a big lie. What? Look, listen to General Dwight D. Eisenhower, leaving office, five-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces, and he warns the American people that the military-industrial complex is taking over, robbing us of the future of the genius of the scientists, the sweat of our labors, and the future of our nation. And look at the future of our nation throughout the Cold War and all these wars. Look at how this country is going downhill so quickly. Look at the gap between the rich and the poor. Look at the wages that people are not making. Look at how 97% of the jobs that are being created are part-time jobs, Chris. This whole war thing is draining the morality, lifeblood, and life out of this country. That was Schwarzkopf's trip. I'm totally against. Look, I'm not a pacifist. I'm a second-degree close combat practitioner. If anybody tries to do anything to me, I will do everything I have to do to stop them. And if I need to kill them, if they're trying to kill me, I will. I'm not a pacifist. I mind my own business. I love this language. Militants attack U.S. base in Afghanistan. Militants attack U.S. base. What if this was reversed? Would it be militants, Afghan militants attack, American militants attack
Afghan base in Alabama, in Birmingham, Alabama?
This is sickness to me. This is total sickness. It's a delusion. And I'm telling you, all you have to do is watch the players. This guy Corker, what a corker he is, shooting his little mouth off. I went through the list of all these guys at that Senate hearing. A bunch of chicken hawks and draft dodges. Every one of these loud mouths, this Representative Engel we have over here in New York. And all they want to do is go fight, go fight, go lead the charge. I don't want you taking my money. And that's the way I look at it. I want every cent of my money staying in the United States. And these people are now taking us to another losing disaster. And worse than that, as I wrote in the Trends Journal, continue to write and have been writing over the years, they're leading us into World War III. And you know that saying by Einstein, I don't know how the Third World War will be fought, but I know the fourth will be fought with sticks and stones.
Exactly, because we don't know just how things might get out of hand. You know, I was reading an interesting article the other day about World War II and the events that led up to the horrific nightmare of that terrible global war. All sides were convinced it would be just a quick little war, and before you know it, things will be settled and everything, peace will be. It was just their officials that threw them into the conflict. We never know just how things might unfold. You know, you have Russia and China that are adamantly opposed to any conflict with Syria. Of course, I'm sure you've read that Russia has armed Syria with many of their protective missiles, some of which have incredibly long range. Why do we want to antagonize the entire world? And, you know, that leads me back to your comments about George Washington. You know, he was one of the most failed commanders in world history. He lost virtually every conflict he ever went into in the French-American Indian War. Look at the American Revolution. We almost lost that as well. But so to hear someone like that say, we don't need to get entangled with these conflicts around the world.
And it's not only him. It's you go through all the founding fathers. They were all opposed to it. And here we are in the midst of it. Now, I ask you this question. You name me one, just one great success that has come out of Washington when they've started, whether it's a war on drugs, a war in the Middle East, to fix education with their education czars. Name me one successful program that you could look at to Washington and say, wow, these are a bunch of intelligent people. I feel very confident that they know what they're doing. Tell me one.
It's hard. It's hard to do.
Maybe no, tell me one.
Meals on Wheels, maybe? I love that program.
Well, it's not, you know, it's more local.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a little thing.
No,
Losers.
Yeah.
They're losers.
They can't balance
the budget. Why would any self-respecting adult listen to what these people have to say? That's the way I look at it. And you know the motto taught to me by my dear father, may his soul rest in peace, think for yourself. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you should think like this. As I see it, these guys and women are a bunch of losers. Leaders? They couldn't lead me across the street. And again, if they want to lead the charge. Our forecast is this. If the United States goes to war with Syria, as I wrote in the Trends Journal that went out as the top trends for 2013, it's the beginning of the first great war of the 21st century.
Well, you know, there are some folks who are claiming that we're already in the early stages of World War III. You just don't declare war many times until long after the stage has been set and the chess pieces are already in motion.
Well, that's exactly it. That's what we've been writing about. And again, you know, I've been writing about this for a number of years. People waiting for an Archduke Ferdinand moment? You know, now it's official. You know, I mean, this thing is going on. Look, let's make this clear. There's a war in Syria, there's a war in Libya. There's a war in Yemen, there's a war in Bahrain, there's a war in Congo, there's a war in the Sudan. They're warring throughout many nations in Africa. There's civil wars going on, but they don't call them that. And those civil wars, what's going on in Greece and in Spain and in Portugal, with this rampant unemployment levels, youth unemployment levels, likes of which have never been seen before. You have a civil war going on in Egypt. Oh, by the way, the United States government has still refused to call it a military coup over there in Egypt. I mean, it's just your imagination that guy Sisi is in charge over there, always wears that military uniform and those dark glasses that's right out of a comic book. That's only your imagination that the military overthrew it. Our government says it wasn't a military coup. So as you go around the world, you can see this destabilization, and then you start adding in the more economics into it, because that's really a lot of what goes on behind the scenes. And as you well know, being with Goldseek, you see what's going on in the emerging markets and how they've lost 11%, you know, they're down 11% this year already, and you see a currency crisis emerging with the Brazilian real, with the Indian rupee, with the Turkish lira, and on and on. You can see these currencies that are going through all these problems as all this hot money is drying up with the fear that interest rates are going up. So you're going to see more and more destabilization. And you know my saying, when all else fails, they take you to war. And that's what they're doing now.
I mean, it's a favorite tactic for supposedly pulling economies out of the quagmire because, well, folks start working and spills over into the economy. But in the final analysis, I stick with your earlier comments, and that is we don't need any part of it. The blowback from this one day will be simply more than this nation can manage. And as we wrap up here, any parting comments, any topics that you'd like to share as we close?
Well, I think it's very important what we're seeing now also with gold, you know, losing a lot of its strength recently that has gained, or some of its strength, and the fear, of course, with the pullback on tapering and stopping some of the hot money flowing in. I believe that they're not going to be able to taper too much, particularly now that they're saying in the emerging markets that the only way to save their failing currencies is to raise interest rates, so that their currencies aren't depreciated even more. Well, how do you raise interest rates in a declining economy without destroying the economy? So I think any kind of tapering, any type of pullbacks is only going to be temporary, because they're going to have to juice the economies with more hot money. And when that hot money flows in, gold goes higher.
No, exactly. You know, I think the markets have either factored it in or priced in most of the taper talk by now, and I think they're starting to look for future economic growth. And, you know, we're also seeing surprising growth out of China, unexpectedly strong economic numbers. The Eurozone looks like it might be finally turning the corner there in its recession. If you bring that all together, that economic improvement certainly could bode well for the precious metals after having such a difficult 2013 so far.
Well, actually, I see more instability, which is going to be stronger for gold. And I don't see, I see the recovery. Yeah, and I see the recovery in Europe being temporary. And I know also that there's a huge debt bubble floating in China that's going to have to be addressed. And the government, despite their calls recently not to keep pumping in money, are doing so, and that's going to reverse as well. So I see more instability coming in the coming months, but I do see that they're going to try to do everything, both in the United States and in Europe, as we already saw at the ECB keeping interest rates near their record lows, to keep the economy propped up to Christmas time, at least. And so that means more hot money flowing in, because they're not going to risk bringing down retail sales at a time when retail sales are already soft.
Very good. Well, low interest rates and safe haven buying, certainly music to the ears of our listeners today. Any contact information you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, you saw the New Trends Journal. It's history before it happens. It's all revamped, a whole new look. And I recommend that everyone consider it's money-back guarantee, nothing to lose, trendsjournal.com, trendsjournal.com. And I can guarantee you, Chris, it's the only magazine where you can read history before it happens.
Now, you've assembled a fantastic team and hat tip for such an economic think tank. You know, and that's what we really need. We need, I don't know, like a university of like-minded individuals who are thinking outside of the box and not afraid to push the limits, because that's the only way we get to the truth. Gerald Celente, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Chris.